Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Hey there, baby. You look great today. Welcome to episode number 180 of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. My name is Lee.
I am Keith.
I am Raymond.
If you like the show, remember to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you grab your podcast and write a short review. Ratings and especially reviews help more people to find out about the show. Or post about it on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you do that, tag us at Brew, Drink, Run. Today, we're talking about running. We're talking about homebrewing. And we are definitely going to drink some beer. Am I right, you guys?
Oh, you're so right.
All right. We're going to start with one, and I like what it's called. Keith, tell us what it is.
I will leave the juvenile jokes to y'all. I'll call it by the right name. We are drinking Deschutes Black Butte Porter.
Deschutes Black Butte.
There we go. All right. Thank you. This is
Butte.
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 You're so fancy.
Let's see. Yes, 5.2% alcohol. Everyday drinking porter. This is a great beer, and we'll get into that. But I'm glad to be drinking this again. I haven't had it in a while, and I really love this beer. And they got some nice new labels too. I see that they've kind of updated that a little bit in the past couple of years or so. But anyways.
Porter. Yeah, it's a different look. Raymond, tell us about how that black butt looks on the glass. They got an illustration of a black butt on it.
What do you want, glass or how it looks on or the bottle?
The glass bottle. Let's do the glass bottle.
The glass bottle? All right, so nice illustrative label here. It's an illustration of what the beer is called. It is a black mountain. So there's forest in the in the foreground, black mountain off in the distance, sunset falling right behind the mountain, makes it look nice and dark. It's a black butte.
Aw, thanks. We do have it actually poured out into a couple of Belgian glasses for our tasting pleasure. Actually, three, not just two, so we each have our own. Raymond, what does it look like in a glass?
A nice-looking porter, really nice and dark. I'm always struck by the difference in viscosity between a porter and a stout and those sorts of things, and the thinness here is always kind of surprising to me because I'm always kind of expecting something thicker, but... once I get past my own little prejudices there, I think this looks really nice.
One of the distinct differences between many stouts and porters is going to be feel and heft, you know. Yeah. So,
absolutely, the aroma on this, there's some quality that a lot of porters have that I have a hard time trying to find a way to describe in the aroma itself. How would you guys describe the aroma of this beer? Because it's one of those things that I'm just like, oh, well, it smells like this thing, but I can't put words to it. Is there something that you guys can pick up?
What I'm getting on this, on the aroma, there's definite chocolatey thing going on. Mm-hmm. There's a mild little bit of roastiness, which is more typical of a stout than maybe a porter, but it's slight in there. I'm also getting like a slight, almost... vanilla marshmallowy kind of thing going on, and those in kind of a sweetness in this. Now, those are the qualities that I'm getting. So it's kind of got a nice sweet little bit of kind of dry, not milk chocolate, but like kind of dry cocoa powder kind of chocolatiness, and just a little bit of roast. I like the aroma. I think it's good.
I think that's all right. I think you're correct in how, and I agree with the way you described it. But there's something in it, like. You named a lot of individual things, but I feel like it all together smells like a thing. And I'm not sure if it's like a raisinette, if it's something that I've had before, or maybe it's just another porter that I've had this kind of thing with. Mm. But it smells like a thing. But I think you did a good job breaking it down for sure, because all of those things that you said, I 100% agree with. But there's just some weird, not weird, but some specific thing that I just cannot place with this. But I'm looking forward to giving it a try. Have you guys already had a sip?
Yeah, this is, as I kind of jumped the gun. This is one of my favorite porters. I think it's as close to the stout line as you're going to get, which is maybe why I enjoy it, but it's got a fairly robust flavor to it. I think the roastiness is a little bit on the high end for a porter on this, which I really like. It's got a nice sweetness to it. It's not quite as probably dry as a lot of porters can be. I think it really comes close to that line. I think that it still comes in as, you know, your porter. It's got a little of that brown tinge in the color, and it's not an insanely robust flavor. But as porters go, it's one of my favorites. It's just right there on that stout edge, and I think it's great.
I got to tell you, the mouthfeel on this, when it first comes in and hits the tongue, it's like a fountain Coke that's a little heavy on the syrup or something. It is, like, with the amount of carbonation and the temperature it is, and the fact that it kind of flashes really quick in your mouth. I mean, it obviously is thicker and creamier than that. But that initial little jolt is so interesting from the way this beer looks and the way this beer smells, that the viscosity really is like that. That the fluidity of this beer is just so able to move and to breathe on its own. And then to be backed up with those roasty flavors. Yeah. Like the idea of the roastiness and the relative thinness of it is an interesting combination.
Sure, yeah.
You would expect it, you know, you think about like a roasted vegetables in a soup that's a thicker broth, or, you know, I don't know, just trying to compare it to other things. You expect the heft of the smoke to, or the roastedness to be held up by a thicker backbone of the malt.
Yeah, right? I mean, it definitely feels like a porter should, but it has that, like I said, it's on that, just on that, you're putting a toe over the line into stout category, so it sort of makes an interesting bedfellow with the mouthfeel. But I don't know. I love this beer. I'm really glad to be drinking it again. It will be excited when, you know, they hopefully start distributing here to be able to get this on a regular basis as a wintertime dark beer, or when I'm in the mood for one in some of the warmer months, because I think this is a great everyday drinking beer.
Well, I want to encourage you guys to save a little bit in your glasses for later on, because we'll be having we'll do a little bit of the side-by-side with
we can do that.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just save a taste later on. We mentioned in episode 179, the last episode, that Raymond had a chance to go up and visit Deschutes. And when you're up there in Virginia, this is their new kind of outpost. The brewery is still being constructed, but they have a tasting room, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And when you were up there, you obviously had some familiarity with the brewery. You had a chance to have some of their stuff before. What were you super excited to pick up? And was there anything you were surprised by that you had there?
I'm very aware of Deschutes, but had not had much. So I was just excited to be trying anything of theirs. I think the main beer I'd had was some of the other anniversary beers that we've had. And I was excited to just happen upon the bottles of those. The beer that I was most surprised with is the Inversion IPA. You guys know I'm not a huge IPA fan, but it turned out to be a really fantastic IPA. It was the one that I walked out with a six pack of, other than the Black Butte here. Just because I liked it so much and I wanted to have some for it at home. So it was, that was a big surprise for me.
Well, what's the story on that beer? What's the story with Inversion? What's, what makes it interesting? Do you remember? Was there a specific thing?
It was just the flavor. It was such a good beer. I had a couple of IPAs while I was in the tasting room. But it really stood out to me. It, had some citrusy flavors to it that were really appealing. It just was really easy to drink and, wasn't overblown, you know, and there's plenty of hops to it, but it wasn't a palate killer by any stretch. Just a nice, good beer, and I'm IPA. And
yeah, well, Deschutes is one of only at this point a small number of breweries that I really most associate with a pale ale. Their Mirror Pond. Mm-hmm. I think when Deschutes came onto the scene, and that's kind of what you did. You had a good solid pale ale, and I have very fond memories of that beer, and of course Black Butte as well. And I'm excited to see them continue to expand their distributing so we can try more of their things here and have easier access to it.
I've been able to sort of come across some things when traveling along the way, but they also are available through a lot of those sort of West Coast mail order.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can receive beer in the mail and you, you know, have the money to afford the, you know, the fees of shipping and all that, I've picked up numerous beers from them over the years when I was doing more of that. You know, just their regular six pack stuff. You know, like they have a Chainbreaker White IPA.
Oh yeah, the Chainbreaker. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Freshly squeezed.
Yeah.
Freshly squeezed is good.
And they had a red ale, like a kind of like almost like a red IPA. I was like something about a chair, red chair, lawn chair, something like that. Anyways, and of course we had the Not the Stoic a few episodes ago. So they do a lot of these kind of barrel aged and big beers. So. They certainly are a fantastic brewery, and again, I'm excited to see their expansion. And so this stuff was brewed in Oregon and shipped across the country. They're not actually brewing in Virginia yet. Is that correct?
That's right. Okay. That's right. Okay. I want to say they even have like a 2-year lead time before the brewery actually opens.
Well, I'm going to read really quickly Keith's review of Black Butte, the base beer which we're having right now. This was published on BrewDrinkRun.com 4.5 years ago.
Oh, so this is going to be a really short review.
Where does the time go? Deschutes Black Butte is an American porter. This is the flagship beer from Deschutes, and trust me, it doesn't disappoint. Rich and creamy with a ton of big roasted malt flavor. More subtle notes of coffee and cream, vanilla and chocolate. Just a hint of hot bite in the finish. With its huge flavor and velvety body, I'm finding it hard to believe this beer is only 5.2% ABV. I really wish this was available here, but until that day comes, I will have to enjoy it the few chances I get.
Yep.
I think the
feel is a little bit different maybe on that bottle or that time, but even with the carbonation and the thinner feel, I do feel like it is kind of, it does coat and it does have sort of a fullness to it in the sense of, you know, being 5.2%. It certainly has a nice feel to it, but yeah, maybe this time around in this experience that there's definitely a bit more carbonation fizz going than maybe I described in that review.
Well, we will definitely talk about Deschutes more a little bit later in the podcast. But first, let's get on to the real reason that people listen to this show, homebrewing. Raymond, how's it going?
I'm thinking about it.
Yeah,
still.
Me too, man.
I sit and I flip through the catalogs and go on the website and look at the gear and I think about how much fun it would be.
I mean, you're almost brewing. I mean, you even ordered some of that stuff and it's sitting around, right? Ready to be brewed?
Well, yeah. That stuff's
gone.
Yeah, that stuff didn't. Yeah.
Those hops have faded.
Yeah, so, nothing like that.
Well, I am actually ordering ingredients this week
for
a beer, you guys. 'Tis almost the season of spooks and specters that I like to call Halloween. That's a little name I have for it. And we're having a little Halloween party.
All Hallows Eve. Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
All Hallows Eve, a Devil's Night. I mean, there are different names for it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
We're going to have a little get-together over at the house, and I figure I don't want to buy good beer for everybody, so let me just brew some mediocre beer and let everybody drink that.
All right, so...
Fantastic plan.
I'm going to a maybe... On attendance.
Oh, no. You get to bring some half fills from work. That'll be great.
All right.
But I'm going to brew a pumpkin spice saison.
All right.
So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keg it thanks to our buddy Corbin. We're going to use his facilities, and I'm going to try not to burn ye olde hop sock.
Oh, yeah, and try not to do that. Yeah.
Try not to do that this time. But it's going to be all grain and, you know, time-wise, I was thinking I may just have to do a bit of a partial mash extract brew and do that myself and then keg it later. But we're going to find time. We're going to carve out time just because I've gotten spoiled, you guys. There's something about that extract flavor that comes through that I have not been able to lick. I know other people have varying degrees of success with extracts or, you know, are more comfortable with it, but I'm kind of tired of it. I've become very sensitive to that taste that I get to sense through. No matter what kind of beer I brew, there's this little note through it that I'm like, ugh, you know, it's not quite right. So I'm looking forward to doing that. It's an interesting recipe. It's the one we picked up at Homebrewers Association's website, homebrewersassociation.org. It's listed there as the Mashing Pumpkins Spice Saison. Yeah, it's a pretty typical base malt bill, and with the additions of cloves and cinnamon sticks and nutmegs and the Saison yeast. So, looking forward to doing that. Corbin has brewed a similar one in the past with a couple of different changes here and there. So I think that hopefully if we don't burn the old hop sock.
just keep your hop sock safe.
There you go. Oh, I know what I should call the beer. The Monster Smash.
The Monster Smash.
Because it's the smashing. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. Not as clever as the original name, but that's good. It's good.
Go for it. Okay, I just love the song The Monster Mash, you guys. I really... really love it. When we're not brewing beer, we're drinking beer. Or we're not brewing beer, let's face it. We're drinking beer, and then we're trying to burn off those calories. Our man Keith's been working off a little bit of an injury, so I'm not going to like harp on his running schedule. But I will harp on Raymond's, because I know he ran today.
I did. I've actually been running a couple of times this week.
I got a push notification when you ran today, sir.
Oh,
I'm stalking you.
I have decided now, temperatures are cooling off a little bit around town, a little bit.
Your BDR weather report this week brought to you by audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun to get a free audiobook.
All right. So I decided I needed to start running again and, have put on a few pounds and wanted to get rid of those. And, my son started up his cross-country practices not too long ago, and so he and I have gone out a couple of times running together, and it's made me get out and get moving more as well. It's also coming up on race season. Whenever I actually participate in runs, it's in the next little
like,
bit.
Over your shoulder, like, nobody heard me say that, right? Like, whoa. There wasn't anybody who's signing me up for a race behind me. Right? I'm not there yet, you guys. You're like, whoa, watch out. Yeah, so, yeah, I agree. It's cooling off. It's feeling better out there. I did a couple of runs this week on some of the gravel and dirt trails out where I live, and it felt good to put on the trail shoes with the cleats. It just feels different, kicks a little bit different. Running on the road is all well and good. It's how we all get by, you know, but it was nice to be able to get out and kind of run in the dirt for a little bit. So I had a couple of good runs this week, but I'm trying to just stay more active in general. My wife is doing CrossFit. Keith, your wife does boot camp, which is a similar thing. Yep. I knew my wife could probably beat me up before. I'm positive she could beat me up now. Your wife's exceptionally strong from all this, very fit. I mean, it's a cool program. I don't think it's for me. Yeah. I hear about it when she comes home and I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound like something I want to partake in, but more power to them for doing that, for finding something they like. I get the feeling accountable part of all that, like just having a personal trainer. I've had friends who have gone that route because it's like, well, I can't trust myself to get up and get out and do it. But if I'm paying somebody and they expect me to be there, it's easier for me. And so I understand that part of it, but the whole kind of team group dynamic part, I don't get. Yeah. I don't get the more traditional kind of doing burpees and squats and thrusts and I don't know what else they do, stuff. It sounds pretty intense is all I know. And I think that people who do it and enjoy it are special, special kind of people, and I appreciate them for that. It's not my bag. Raymond, you gonna start doing the CrossFit?
No.
You're just gonna run?
No. I did find out I have a gym at work though, and I might take advantage of that.
You totally should. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let us know how it is. Next episode, I wanna find out more about this.
No, you won't.
Okay, great.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
Raymond's Book Corner is the part of the show where we find out about books that nobody wants to read, so why not let someone else read it for you? That's right, Audible Books, audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. Get a free trial subscription, get a free audiobook, audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. They've got thousands of books available, and one of them might be this one. Raymond, what do you have this week?
I have a book that I thoroughly enjoyed, Ready Player One.
It's excellent.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. A fun book. Hadn't read one that was that fun and entertaining in a while, and it did not last long enough because I absorbed that book. It was quick read.
I'm super nervous about the movie. I feel like the book was so good, but I also feel that it's very well suited for a movie. So just the way it's paced, the way the acts are structured, it's basically a screenplay. It'll probably be fine. Like any book, they'll have to take some parts of it out for time.
Oh, sure.
But
Steven Spielberg, and hopefully it's going
to
be fine.
I'm interested in the licensing that has to go on for this.
I thought the same thing when I was reading this.
So the background on this, Ready Player One, is a dystopian future.
Yes.
Where
not too distant future.
Not too distant, but dystopian.
Yes.
And, you know, people are forced to live in these really squalor-like conditions. Yes. There's a big shortage of food and water, and the environment has been ravaged from some undisclosed nuclear threat or, you know, global warming or something has caused there to be a big problem and resources are scarce.
Yep.
But there is this hyper-realized version of the internet that people have access to. Kids go to school on it and people go to work on it. And you have this culture where people are just logged on all day long for as much as they can afford because their fantasies were... They can live in a version of the world that's not so
They're pretty much addicted to this alternate reality.
For good reason.
Yes, because for good reason.
Because it's better than where they are. But there's a real affinity for 80s culture in this whole networked realm. And so there are constant references to 80s video games, tabletop games, movies.
Music.
Yes.
And they're played throughout the book, and then the characters are listening to them. They're watching the movies. They're playing the video
because
games.
These are all clues in this epic quest.
Yes,
and
there's a game.
It's a very interesting kind of scenario. It's kind of Hunger Games-ish in a way, in that there's this competition that the victor gets all this money or fame or fortune or however it's structured. A lot of competition elements of it, and it is again this dystopian future, but it's done in this Matrix-y, Tron-like kind of virtual world. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Keith, you've been listening to this. What do you think? Ready Player One, you going to pick that up?
Yeah, oh, sure. I'm gonna listen to that by going to audible.com.
Yeah, audibletrial.com/BrewDrinkRant. I also want to give a quick plug for another podcast. Our buddy Trent has just finished a run for the Cincinnati Inquirer. It's called The Great American Dream. It's an 11-part podcast series following Reds prospect Shed Long in the minor leagues. So if you're interested in baseball at all, or even tangentially, kind of like I am, it's a really interesting look at what the player development process is and some of the culture surrounding baseball. In each episode, he kind of picks a different theme, and it's not even just like stats and how stats play into that, although there's some of that into the recruiting and development, but also things like race in baseball and things like how personal bonds develop between the players in the minors versus the majors. And you get some really neat snippets, not just through this one player, but there's some great interviews with Ken Griffey Jr., Joey Votto, other current and past Reds, and other major league players sharing their thoughts and their experiences on the minors as you follow this one particular player. So very cool. Great American Dream. It's available from the Cincinnati Inquirer, but you can get it on all your regular podcast directories. All right. We're going to drink another beer. We'll be right back. I'm going to play some music, though, to make it seem like we're going someplace.
Where'd you go? Back. I went for a run.
Oh, good.
Just a quick one.
Let me pull up your time real quick on Runkeeper. Ooh, you could have done better. That was not your best outing. I think you should have saved that run for later. Round two, the second part of our show. this is where we tend to go for something that's a little bit harder to find, something that's maybe got a little bit of a different cachet to it, something that we're excited and maybe you're going to be a little bit challenged by to drink. Keith, what is round two today for us on the Brew, Drink, Run podcast? Big episode number 180.
We have Black Butte.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. It's not your regular. It's extra-sized. No, it's
what?
It's the 29th birthday reserve version of this beer.
29.
Wait. I don't know what that means.
I don't either. He's going wrong.
You have a more interesting life than I do. All right, so porter. This is a porter, duh.
Surprise.
It's going to be brewed with a Dutched cocoa. Okay. Dutched. I've never heard that term before, but I guess...
It's a thing. It's the way it's processed.
The way it's processed.
Yeah,
okay.
It's essentially cocoa, but it's processed slightly differently to reduce the acidity.
Okay. Saigon.
Dropping knowledge. Yeah. Do you actually know that?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. That's cool. I didn't know. This is also has Saigon cinnamon and cayenne, 50% aged in bourbon and rum barrels. So half of this beer is the original beer. Half of it has been aged in a combination of bourbon and rum. So that's what we have here. It's a bottle, kind of hard to read, bottled 6/12/17, which is interesting because I think Deschutes is kind of famous for drink after. So this one actually has a bottle date. So maybe they're saying drink this one fresh. So we're getting to it a few months a little late, but that's fine.
More importantly, I fact-checked Raymond, and he's completely correct.
he went into that right away. Oh. I know he wasn't blowing smoke.
I know, but still, I had to check. So the Black Butte.
I get fact-check all the stuff we do on this podcast, and that's what you fact-check.
You said it with a startling amount of authority. It wasn't like there was a question
the first time
mark.
We fact-checked anything.
Oh, boy.
We don't even apologize when we're wrong.
No. We normally do not know and do not care to find out.
Yeah, we never even find out if we're wrong.
All right, 29, Black Butte. If you see this bottle on a shelf, tell us about the label art on it, Raymond.
Oh, okay. This is a very kind of classy label here. Black label. It's got the paper is that kind of wine bottle paper. It's got a little texture to it. Black label, as you might expect from a Black Butte. But the Black Butte is done in white. And then the 24 is done in Roman numerals, 29th birthday reserve, and just the Deschutes logo at the bottom. Just very clean, classic label.
And we poured it into a glass. We've all got a little bit of the original base beer for this still left in the glass. It's not a full pour, of course, but does the look differ at all for you, Raymond? It's hard to tell when there's different amounts in the glass, when light's coming through and that sort of a thing. But
I don't think so. It looks pretty similar.
It's a little darker to me.
Maybe a little.
The other one had a little more brown tint to it, and a little bit like, you know, you can kind of see through the top of it. Has that kind of caramel cola color on the top of the glass. This one feels a little bit darker.
It's definitely hard to tell for me because I feel like when it was a fuller glass, that I didn't have that same amount of ability to see through with that lighter brown. But regardless, they're close enough. Let's face it. The aroma on this is really pretty spectacular, Keith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has actually a lot of the same qualities of the other one, minus maybe the kind of more roasty qualities. It's definitely sweeter. A lot of kind of vanilla notes coming off on this for me. I'm not getting really much of the pepper. Definitely very chocolatey. So I think the cocoa is adding a lot. But if we're talking about cayenne, I'm not really getting any pepper. I would say the barrel is minimal, but I think it's probably adding some of the vanilla and maybe a little touch of woodiness to it, but it's very, very muted.
The big difference in aroma for me is the first one is that roast. I get so much more of the char or the smokiness on the aroma from the first one. And the second one for me, it smells much boozier without it. You know, when I'm just getting those sweeter notes without the roast to back it up. So my simple brain interprets that as boozy because it's sweet. What was the ABV on this? Did anything come through on the... It's got to be a little bit higher than the base beer.
Give me a second.
Yeah. Filling time.
Did we talk about the ABV on the original?
We did. It's what, 5.2?
5.2?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that was from Keith's review from a couple years ago, so it sounds like they probably haven't changed the recipe, but you know.
Yeah. I actually don't see it on here.
All right, cool. I'll do a little bit of side research while we are continuing to discuss the merits of this beer. I'm going to go and take a sip. I don't care. Let's see.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to drink this thing.
Oh, it tastes real good. Oh, I like that a lot.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Done.
Huh. Wow, this one really turns the middle taste.
Here it is, 12.2.
Oh, where was
that?
Oh,
that's a big difference. Okay.
Where was it?
It's right there. It's right by the
bottom. It's in that stamp. Okay. I didn't see that. Yeah, that stamp's hard to read.
Yeah, 12.2.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, I didn't even look at the stamp. I thought it was just the date on there.
Man, that's a huge jump. Yeah. 7% difference?
Well, I mean, it is an Imperial versus... I mean, they do state that it's an Imperial version. Yeah. Kind of Imperial Reserve version of this, of the porter, so... Mm.
Can we talk some more about how great this smells?
You know, I saw the, just when I was looking for the ABV, saw that it's part of its rum barrel. I know we mentioned that before, but now I get that. The rum's coming through now.
Yeah, I agree. There's that distinct kind of spirity sweetness in it that...
It is a boozy beer. Yeah. It is. For something that was bottled 6-something, this is still hot. I mean, I think one of the major flavor elements for me is just kind of alcohol. It's very, very boozy.
And that's hot in alcohol, not hot in spice, because the cayenne is not coming through.
It's not coming through much at all. Maybe just a little bit on the end, but it's more of that cayenne flavor, not a heat, not a spiciness, not something that'll make you go, it's hot, I need a glass of water, but more like just kind of flavor a little bit on the end. But... It really changes too. This beer, I got to take another sip, but it starts out just kind of sweet and a little bit like a bigger version of what we had before, and then it just kind of takes this turn, and some of that, I feel like that woodiness and the flavor kind of changes right there in the middle.
So read to me remind me of what the additions are here.
In celebration of our 20th anniversary, this year's Imperial Porter deserves notes of dark chocolate and cinnamon spice with hints of coconut, vanilla, and dried fruit, finished in by a warm dash of cayenne.
Has the Dutch cocoa, Saigon cinnamon, cayenne, and is 50% aged, so it's a blend with fresh and not within bourbon and rum barrels, so some percentage of that 50% is going to be two different types of barrel. It would be my guess as to what that means.
The dark chocolate specifically, I feel like I have a really good handle on this. Yep. And it is that really like that, if you ever buy like that 85% cacao, that really bitter, there's no sweetness to it, whatever, that really strong, hard chocolate. I get that cleanly in this beer. Really easy to pick that out.
I feel like the cinnamon is sort of that turn it takes in the middle, and I think it took me a second to place the flavor. I think that cinnamon mixes with a really kind of dry, oaky, little bit of vanilla, the barrel part of it.
Cinnamon is interesting because I feel like cinnamon can go two ways with things. I mean, it can do that light spicing thing like you expect it to, like the aroma alludes to. And then cinnamon also can be hot. Can be a peppery kind of thing in certain situations. But I like what you're saying about it working into what could be the wood, the oakiness and the vanilla. Mm-hmm. There's a really close correlation between that little punch of spice and then moving into that dryness and the sweetness.
Yeah, I see. I'm not getting a whole lot, and maybe it's just correlating to the booziness, but I'm not getting a whole lot that makes me think barrel-aged. Anything like, you know, that kind of distinct bourbon flavor you get on, you know, certainly really aggressively aged bourbon. So you think about your like Bourbon County, you know, there's a ton of bourbon flavor. I'm not really getting that. And the rum, it's a sweet beer, so some of that might be playing in, but I'm not really getting anything personally that tastes rumish. I know they mentioned like hints of coconut, so maybe at some point when they were sampling this out of the barrels, they were getting some coconut flavors, you know.
But they didn't say they added coconut.
No, no, no. There's no coconut added. That was more of their implying what you might taste or what they taste. But I really actually like this quite a bit. I think it's taken a few sips for me to really get into it.
Go back and try your black mute, but now I'm
starting to try the other one now.
Yeah, just go back and try the original beer. And like, it's so different.
They're not very much the same at
it
all.
It is so amazingly different.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that they use this beer as the inspiration or the base for this anniversary series,
you know,
for experiments like this.
Funny thing that's happening when I went back and tried the original one, or the Black Butte Porter, it almost tastes now, with all the sweetness and everything that's going on, it almost tastes like it's got like a huge lactose thing going on in it.
Oh, interesting.
That's what I'm like tasting, like it's almost tasting like a milk stout all of a sudden.
I thought so too.
I think I've just picked up so much residual sweetness from the big sweet, you know, barrel aged version of this with all the extra things. I just thought that was interesting. Did not taste that at all the first time. So it's funny how that worked.
If this episode sounds at all familiar to you, we had in episode 110, we had the Black Butte 26 on that podcast. So we have talked about this beer before, and Keith was good enough to write up a review of that beer on our website as well. With this, it was also 50% aged in bourbon barrels, just 50%, not a split of two different barrels, and is dry spiced with cocoa nibs, pomegranate molasses, and cranberries. That was a 10.8% ABV beer, and like you said, it was a best after 6/16/15. So we had that almost a full year after the best buy or best after. And your review in that really does talk about how you do get that pomegranate, the cherry tartness, and a fruit jam, you called it, within the Imperial Porter base. And so your kind of closing thought is this is a great beer, but maybe not one you'll remember for a long time after drinking it, which is interesting. I mean, like, it's always, in retrospect, when I hear that now, well, a porter with, like, a fruit jam kind of thing going on, like, oh, I think that would be, but in the moment, you know, probably not. And the other one that you reviewed for us was Black Butte 24. And this was reviewed on the website way back in December of 2013.
Long time ago.
Yeah. And that one was brewed with dark chocolate nibs, daglet dates, and mission figs. So they always love to pick the specific varieties of things for these. Yeah. And that one you called insanely complex, in that it's a very sweet. But you were getting those dark fruits that they stuck around to it. But then you also had caramel, molasses, chocolate, vanilla, a little soy sauce, some of that anise and licorice, tobacco, and a fair amount of roast and leather on the finish. And I love that you said, and this is one of your original kind of like paragraph reviews. It's a longer paragraph, but you say, seriously, I'm not trying to pad this review. Because you were really getting all of that in it. And you did say to go ahead and drink that one if you had it once the Best Buy was passed, and that Best Buy was right about, you know, just a couple of months before, or Best After was just a couple of months before you had it. So it's cool. If you want to go back to brewdrinkrun.com, you can read more about those beers. Check out the label art. Check out what they look like in a glass. They're a porter. And learn some more about it there. So what parts of this are we not getting? We said that from the tasting notes, the coconut, I guess you're maybe, and I feel like I'm super sensitive to that, and I'm not.
No, I think that is, again, that's implied by them. There's no coconut added to this, so you, other than the fact that they say it's there, I mean, your own taste buds are gonna, you know, relay, and maybe when it was bottled in, you know, June, it was there. So I mean, I think that's, you know, a fair guess, but I'm not really getting that. To me, the only, I mean, I don't think the cayenne is really playing. I think that it's just,
there's most, heat, but I can't tell what it's from.
See, I'm not getting anything that I would call heat or spice in this at all. I do get, like I said, maybe a touch of that flavor on the finish, but it's so light that honestly, I might just want it to be there.
Yeah.
So
for me, it's, I can't tell. I don't feel like it's the cayenne. I feel like it could be the cinnamon providing the heat, or I feel like it could be just kind of an alcoholish burn.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't associate cayenne. There's plenty of alcohol burn
in the beer. Yep. So, right. I mean, there is that kind of heat. So.
Well, I feel like we've talked about this, and it's time to turn to the real experts about beer, the internet.
To beer or not to beer, it's time for Beer Review Theater.
Beer Review Theater, we are going to go to the internet, find a review for this beer, and make fun of it. This is... Look, I'm just cutting straight to the chase tonight, you guys.
That's what we're doing.
This is the Black Butte 29, their anniversary beer from Deschutes. I'm going to go to Beer Advocate there because I couldn't find a beer review other than Beer Advocate for this beer that was worth reading. This review comes from Beer Advocate user Edward Abbey. Edward's user profile pic, it's probably from some pop culture thing. I don't recognize it, but it's a guy like in a safari shirt, one of those like tan collared shirts with like a bandana tied around his neck, like a red bandana. And he's got a beard and it's kind of got a salt and pepper beard thing going on. It's a very dramatic photo. I have to think it has to be taken from like a movie poster or something else. If this is Edward Abbey's photo, I want him to please God call us and tell us what his voice sounds like, because it just, it has that classic European adventurer, rough and rugged thing going on. I imagine he's seen a lot of life, this Edward Abbey. So I'm going to take his beer review at fullness. I'm going to absorb it all. I'm going to appreciate it for what it is. Edward Abbey gave this beer a 3.8 out of 5. That's a look of 3.5, a smell of 4, a taste of 3.75, a feel of 3.75 for an overall 3.75 or a 3.8. I may, should read, revisit this one down the road, as I found it quite disappointing fresh out of the bottle. The adjuncts, like the barrel character, admittedly, it was, per Deschutes' general custom, only partially barrel-aged, struck me as muted and unremarkable. And the base porter, amped up to industrial strength, didn't really cut it for me either. It was also conspicuously light and thin. This beer ought to improve in about a year or so, like others in this venerable series have tended to do. But I unfortunately didn't especially care for this particular vintage of it now. For what it's worth and my 2 cents, the truly great barrel-aged beer should be great, both fresh and aged. You shouldn't have to apologize and make allowances for them when they're young. Wise words.
Indeed.
I feel that way about my kid. You shouldn't have to apologize and make allowances for them when they're young. I feel like they should just come right out swinging. They're full versions of themselves. What do you guys think about that? So a couple of points that Edward Abbey made here. He reviewed this in July. So just a couple of weeks after the bottling. And again, he made that remark similar to the other beers that you have reviewed in this series. That they have a best after date.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this one, I didn't see that listed. You guys didn't see that listed. But that idea of you wait a year before you try it. Would waiting a year before you try this, do you think that would make a difference in this beer?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would change it.
Do you think it would be a positive difference? It's
really hard to say. Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying this beer. I think that it has the same issue maybe that I had with the last one that I got a chance to try, is that it's really good. I don't think I'm going to pine over being able to have this again years from now. And there are beers that I still occasionally think about, or I see if I'm bored and flipping through Untappd and I see someone in my feed who opens a bottle of something that I'd had a couple years ago, and that was the one chance. I'm like, oh, I wish I had another one of those because it was so good. I don't think I would remember this beer in that way. And is it going to be better in a year? I don't know. Maybe. I guess yeah. It could be. It's going to... I mean, it could lose a little alcohol heat, but I think that cinnamon character that's in there could fade mm-hmm. pretty quickly, too. And again, we're not even having it, you know, fresh. I mean, we're having it almost, what, 3.5-4 months after bottling at this point. So, yeah. You know, we're... You know, it's not old. I mean, a 3-month-old beer isn't old. So I would say we're probably getting 90% of what was there originally at this point. So mm-hmm. Maybe. Look, if you have the means and this is available on your shelf, I would put one away maybe, just if you're curious. But I'd say just go ahead and drink it and enjoy it. It's a good beer.
You know? He called the mouthfeel on this conspicuously light and thin. So we're able to go back and forth between the two. I feel like the mouthfeel is more fun than more full than the base porter.
It's more fun.
It is more fun.
It's a funner feel. Like,
look, yeah. I've already stopped using words. It is more full to me than the base beer. Do you guys
absolutely.
Agree? Yeah. It's obviously not a stout. It's not a big, roasty, creamy stout. But I don't feel like the mouthfeel is inappropriate for an imperial porter.
No, I think it's actually quite spot on. It's got a slickness to it. It's almost a touch in an oily sense, which is gives it a little bit fuller feel. But I don't necessarily want a porter, imperial or not, to be thick and chewy.
The last thing he said that I'm interested in is he referred to any character that the barrel would impart to the beer as an adjunct. And I always have considered adjuncts to be things that you add to the brewing phase of the beer.
The cinnamon and the cayenne and the cocoa here are adjuncts.
But the barrel aging is not.
I've never heard it referred to as that. Yeah, I mean, it's an aging process, so you're adding a different element, not by adding it to the beer, but by the vessel adding it to the beer. So I would not, maybe I might technically be wrong, or we might technically be wrong, but I would not consider that to be an adjunct. But I mean, you know, we're not talking about, I don't know what this guy knows about
Edward Abbey.
I don't know if Edward Abbey is a, you know, a professional beer writer. And
I think he's a professional adventurer.
He's an explorer.
I think he's the male Laura Croft. I'm pretty sure that's... I invite him to call the show. I want Edward Abbey on the show. I think that would be a lot of fun. Humorous. Please don't come and beat us up, because I'm pretty sure you could beat me up. Final thoughts on the Black Butte 29. It just seems like this series, you know, having... tried one other, read reviews for a couple of others in the series. I think it's a great idea of what they're doing for anniversary beer. Brewing this beer, making an imperial, and then doing different twists on it every year to make it interesting. I think that's a great idea. How would you, not necessarily score, but what's your lasting impression of the 29?
I think it's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it immensely. Thanks to Raymond for picking one up. I don't know what he paid for it. I don't know if it's he might have a different opinion based on value, you know, kind of thing. But as someone who has gotten a chance to try something in the mid rare range, I mean, I'm sure it's somewhat limited, and although it hits distribution, does not hit my distributor. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is a somewhat hard to get beer, and I'm very thankful to have tried it. Like I said, I don't know that I'm going to remember this one when I get a chance to try the next one.
Yeah.
But I will say that I think my very first experience with that, you know, the first one that I got to try, I don't remember what year it was, 24 or something like that, was an experience that made me say, oh, pick up one of these when you see it, kind of thing. And every beer in the two that I've had since then, I would not hesitate to pick up 30, or I wouldn't hesitate to pick up 28 if I saw it sitting around somewhere or had a chance, you know, to try it. So it's a really good beer. I think that it's worth the effort to try.
Raymond, you mortgaged your house to buy this beer. What did you think about it?
Nowhere near it. This was actually a very affordable bottle, good. And I actually picked up a couple of them.
So we will have to see it later.
Because the reason why I picked up a couple of them was I wanted one for the podcast, of course, but My wife really enjoyed this, and she does not do dark beers at all. So to me, this was a huge score because it was a porter that I could sit and drink with my wife later on down the road. And, that's an experience that's waiting to happen.
Oh, you can report back on the changes.
Report back on that. Well, I want to hear all about that night. I appreciate this too. Thank you so much for picking this over, and this is really good. It's nice to have this again. I like how the different elements come together. It's interesting in that a lot of times when you read the label or a brewery's description, it does place a lot of little notes in your head. And so it's interesting sometimes to have one that we don't 100% agree with, sure, the tasting notes. I think that's interesting in and of itself, and that it gives us a different kind of point to judge it by. Yeah. For more about us and Brew Drink Run, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brew Drink Run, on Instagram at Brew Drink Run, or on Facebook at facebook.com/brewdrinkrun. We're also still on Untappd for some reason. If you want to be a part of the show, you can email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Let us know about your home brewing, your running training, or your favorite place to grab a beer. Even better, call us, 781-76-DRINK, 781-763-7465. We would love to hear your voice, especially if you are Edward Abbey, or if you want to do your impression of Edward Abbey, I'd like to hear that too. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts.
I'm gonna be Edward Abbey for Halloween.
Oh my gosh, what a great idea. What a great idea, please be. Brew Drink Run t-shirts, technical running shirts. They look great on race day. I love to see us tagged on your race day shirts. Available on our website. Click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you at the bar. Cheers, you guys.
Cheers.
Nailed it.
Nice clinky clinky.
Edward Abbey do that.
Adventure my ass.